This is Chasing Encounters, a podcast about stories, languages, cultures, and identities. We highlight diversity and intersectionality in contemporary society through respectful and thought-provoking conversations.
Hello, everybody. This is Chasing Encounters. Once again, we are getting closer to the winter here in Toronto. Today we have two special guests. We always have special people. For me, always is a special people, so there is no way to have non-special people. But one of the good things about today's podcast is because we have two people, so we're going to have a conversation as a group rather than a two-way conversation. So we have on one half, we have Hillary Nalus and Monica Beta.
Thanks for having us.
Likewise, thank you for the invitation.
So I think probably a little bit of to get us started into the conversation today, a lot of our listeners usually or typically would like to know a little bit of your background, your culture, where you're coming from, etc. So maybe the two of you separately, you can tell us about where you're coming from, something interesting about you and your community and your heritage, your culture, probably about your family, any food related, music, belief systems, if you want to, ways of behaving, ways of believing, ways of being, right? Gender relationships, anything in your community. So we're going to start with Monica. Please go ahead and introduce yourself and let us know a little bit about your community and who you are.
Sure. Thank you. One of my mentors also reminds me to try to use Tagalog, like a language that was very hard for me to learn over time. So I will try. I will likely butcher it. Hillary here can correct or affirm my opportunity here to speak. And then I will also continue on in English. So, kamusta, ako si Monica, taga Toronto ako. So hello, my name is Monica. I'm originally from Toronto or Toronto, but I'm currently calling in from Jajage, otherwise known as Montreal, unceded lands of the Gahekanaga Nation. And so I start this way, I think, to situate myself, as a second gen Filipina in the Canadian diaspora, but one that is continuously trying to learn, right? What does it mean to live in relation to different communities, more specifically Indigenous communities, and not just like Indigenous hypothetical communities, but the ones who caretake and protect the lands that I'm finding as my current home. So, I mean, we're here. I'm excited to have this conversation with a student I've met while I also was a graduate student, right? I think there's an interesting history that we're willing to share with you in conversation today. I'm happy to talk more, but I'm a current PhD candidate at the School of Social Work at McGill. First generation student, don't know what the heck I was doing, but gladly found my way to the academy with a very pointed and clear agenda in mind. So I'm happy to explore that further, because this is why I think Hillary and I are here today, to show the intersections and the threads that bring this work together in a very beautiful way in the broader Filipino community here in Canada. So with that, I pass it to my dear friend and travel companion, Hillary.
Thank you, Monica. My name is Hillary Nalus. I am currently situated in Tacaronto in Toronto. I want to talk about my migration story a little bit. My family moved here in Canada 2007. I am 1.5 generation immigrant. I moved here with three of my siblings, and I've been in Canadian education system ever since I was 10. And then I'm also like the first one in my family, quote unquote, to go into post-secondary studies. It was a big deal for my parents, but also I really just did it for myself and my own growth on a professional and also personal level. I speak Tagalog and Kapampangan very fluently, and I'm so very proud of maintaining my languages. And I have a goal right now to teach my younger siblings how to fluently speak in Kapampangan and Tagalog as well. So that's a little bit about me. And I'm currently a student at OISE. I'm taking Master of Teaching, and I teach history and English for grade 7 to 12.
Nice. Thank you so much for introducing yourself to our listeners today. I really like how you started, Monica, talking about your relationship with the land, your relationship with the two places where you sort of belong as well. You mentioned the idea of indigenous communities, and let me get started with this question about indigenous communities. The work that you do, is it related to indigenous communities in the Philippines living in Canada, or indigenous Canadian indigenous communities, so to speak? How would you see that work?
I'm hoping in my roundabout conversation or answer to your question reflects, I think, the cyclical or circle oriented learnings that have been happening, like prior to the PhD, let alone through the program. So my work now is very different than what I originally thought it would be when I was applying. So when I met Hillary, and we can talk about this as we segue to Hillary too, right? When I met Hillary, I was 3 years into the education profession, right, in terms of certification, but had been doing education in other spaces for a long time prior to. And it was as a professional that I then somehow stumbled upon this realization and the evidence, the growing evidence base, that Filipinos don't really go to post-secondary. First generation, you know, the 1.5 or first to arrive in their family, let alone the second generation. And learning this in the context of a white scholar, right, actually naming it, in the community, and I didn't know, I just attended something for the first time, I was like taken aback. And then when posed, so I'm hearing this information for the first time, statistics, evidence, qualitative information that actually speaks to my realities, it's being spoken for the very first time. The question I posed, right, to the scholar and to the broader community, that I had no connection to at the moment, was like, so what do we do if Filipinos are not really going to post-secondary? Like, okay, thank you for giving me the reasons why and the barriers to that, fine, because I can see it in my own life. What are we supposed to do? And no one gave me a real clear answer. This, I can remember this. And shortly thereafter, right, I came into contact through Hillary, to Hillary and other student groups, other student initiatives, because tasked with this new information, I was just trying to figure out who is actually doing that work. So my PhD application work was reflective of a few years of work trying to learn, right, who's doing what, and where are students or youth finding these spaces for support, and not finding much. Right? I had hoped that given my interest in the Toronto context, in going to Montreal or going to McGill, what's happening with youth there? You know, fast forward to now, that I'm no longer necessarily just hyper-focused on youth issues or Montreal issues, but it's a much larger conversation about the infrastructure for support for folks in our community, regardless of youth, regardless of age, regardless of generation. And when I think about my hard learning, right, of this very area, it was at the same time, like a simultaneous unlearning, right, or awareness of my position, right, as a settler, as a racialized woman, as a woman of color, right? And it was through the ongoing, sometimes surprise and happenstance opportunities to listen with Indigenous students and Indigenous scholars. And I did not even have the language to understand fully why I was getting so emotionally wrapped up, right, in the culturally affirming ways they created for themselves, right, for other audiences to also learn. But it kept me also wondering, why don't we have those spaces for ourselves? So I'm hoping in showing this like kind of roundabout illustration of kind of my connection to Indigenous sovereignty work or Indigenous education work is through understanding my own experience and the literatures and the scholarships that apparently tell me I'm hyper-marginalized and will likely not finish school. And I show everything that counters that argument, but I'm also interested in building something alternative, something different from these kind of soul-sucking or marginalizing scripts that tell me that I am a person to be helped. So I'm hoping that in sharing that, it might pose some interesting dynamics that Hillary might respond to as it relates to her introduction to her work, because I think we have interesting intersections here that we had planned to show you or speak to you about today in terms of why we do what we do.
So my research right now really focuses on mother tongue language retention of Filipino students in Canada, or specifically in Toronto. This is coming from my own experience, like partly losing my language and trying to reclaim it and being successful at it. And also my siblings really inform this research because I can see their struggles in trying to understand like our culture in a different way through language. And we always talk about, or like in academia, you always hear like language is power and language is like reclamation of identity. And yes, I agree to that. But also, what about those youth that are facing that loss of identity, of culture, and understanding of like a specific worldview? So that's where I started digging deeper in terms of my research, and I want to focus on how Filipino educators specifically support Filipino language retention for students. And there's already work being done, and I know this because I've met some Filipino educators who are providing culturally responsive pedagogy and culturally relevant materials to their Filipino students. And I'm kind of like talking about like my other work, which is as a youth support worker. I can see that Filipino youth specifically do not have resources, do not have access to resources that are relevant to them. Most of the time when they get support from their school or from elders or from family members, they are not genuinely not interested. And they not interested in a way that like, they don't think it's productive for them. They don't think it will benefit them. They don't think it will motivate them. So there's like that loss with the Filipino youth in Toronto specifically that I'm realizing now as when I wear my hat as like a Filipino youth support worker. I'm seeing the discrepancies in like the resources that are provided to them and the resources that they can access that is not tailored to their needs specifically.
Yeah. No, definitely. I somehow relate to what you're saying because when I arrived to Canada almost 10 years ago, I sort of started working as a Spanish teacher for a heritage program. And like you were saying, a lot of students, they did not want to learn the Spanish. They felt that they were being forced to learn Spanish, although their parents really wanted to revitalize the language sort of because they feel like they lost the Spanish they learned. And I always wonder why is that the students don't want to learn Spanish. And one of the things that I discovered at that time was that they don't need Spanish in the daily day to basis. You know, their friends speak English, television is in English, school is in English, all the material, everything is in English. So for them, it's like, I don't need this language. I don't need to learn this language because of that. Then what's the point for me to learn it? That's where they are coming from. Now, the reason why I was able to engage these students into learning Spanish is because somehow I managed to motivate the students to learn Spanish and sort of sell them the idea that there is the right way to do. This is about relearning or sort of going back to the culture, learning about the roots from the parents, grandparents, etc. And sure, some of them were able to, or they bought my idea, so to speak. So I wonder for you, Hillary, I know you have faced similar situations like me back in the day. Why? My question to you is, why do you think that the students are not interested in in learning Tagalog in this case, or other languages from the Philippines? Why is this that they are not, and what have you done to address this issue?
It's very interesting, this question that you pose, because the youth I encounter are genuinely interested in learning about their mother tongues. The where it becomes kind of like messy or complicated is that their parents believe that they don't need to learn Tagalog. They don't need to learn mother tongue languages because they're in Canada and they're going to start a new life here and they're going to settle here and start a family here, whatever, right? So the youth that I encounter now, they genuinely want to learn or relearn their mother tongue languages. So in the workshops that I host, I always ask them, what languages do you speak? Some of them English, French, Tagalog, yes, but also you have these like unique languages, not dialects, whole unique languages that are in the like Philippine based. So I encourage them to keep their curiosity alive. And I want to give them resources and I want to connect them with people who are fluent in their mother tongues just so they can maintain it. So it's a very different situation when it comes to the Filipino community in Toronto, or like the youths that I encounter in Toronto, because they genuinely want to reconnect with their culture through language and through ancient script, like Baybayin, like that. But they don't have resources to elevate themselves in that aspect.
Right. So I wonder if you can help us understand a little bit better the work that you do, if you can just enlighten us in a sense to give us a couple of examples of activities or tasks or any kind of things that you actually do with them. Like you ask them to watch TV, like a TV in Tagalog, and then hand them some worksheets. Or do you play games? Or do you sing songs? Or do you do theater? Tell us a couple of examples that you actually did concrete. I want my audience to maybe be inspired by the work that you do if they are teaching other languages and they have a hard time to teach their languages.
Mm-hmm. So I work as a Filipino youth supporter for a nonprofit organization, Urban Alliance on Racial Relations. And my main task is creating youth workshops specifically for Filipino high school students. And my aim in that workshop is to help students maintain their academic success and also provide them like resources for emotional well-being, especially now that they're going through virtual school or like they're like just the school system is different. So how I kind of facilitate the workshop, I provide them with academic resources and studying tips, success tips, and stuff like that. But I also help them try to practice self-care, this notion of self-care, like taking care of your body, appreciating your body, and being thankful for it and what it does for you. I encourage them to speak in their mother tongues, even though like some students only speak English and some people, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a good way to be exposed to the different sounds of Filipino culture. And I also respond to them in Tagalog whenever they speak in Tagalog, or in Kapampangan, whenever they speak in Kapampangan. There's this multilingual aspect of like the facilitation in our workshops. And also, I'm not doing this alone. This is a community effort. I asked like post-secondary students to also help collaborate and facilitate on these workshops that are also equipped with mother tongue languages based in the Philippines. So it's not just me. This is a collective effort and this is youth led. And yeah.
That's very interesting. I think some of the ideas that you have told us today, I hope they inspire our audience at some point, because I understand and a lot of people who listen to this podcast are teachers, and not only like teachers, but language teachers, and they want to have some idea of what to do in their classroom that when things like this happen. So now I'm moving on to Monica, and I want to connect the work that Hillary does on a regular basis, and I want to connect with Monica. How did you relate the work that you do with your community? You know, I follow you on social media for a long time, and you post lots of things that are related to community. So I wonder, first of all, how would you describe the idea of community or the concept of community, and how did you relate those concepts with your own work?
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear about Hillary's current work because it inspires me and reminds me of my early work. And my route from education to social work was to also look at other spaces beyond the official classroom, community spaces or clinical spaces that allow for the affirmation, right, on so many different accounts, right, to be made visible and made normalized for folks like Hillary, for folks like me. And because we're now serving in educational roles, right, as teachers, for me in the university context, I'm more situated there, but still the premise, I think, remains the same. The goal remains the same. So Hillary and I actually first met because I had invited her to hear about a project and an initiative that I was trying to build with my newcomer youth participants in the community. At this point, I had a particular project that got a certain youth, a youth I had identified as a potential leader, to visit with me two other sites outside of Toronto. So we had gone to Hawaii and we had also gone to Vancouver. And in going to these two different sites, I was trying to show this youth existing programs, right, that also serve Filipino newcomer youth, totally different histories. One was like approaching 35, 38 years of existence. The other one, second year, right, of existence. Just to show, without the pressure to like build something immediately, I had taken this particular youth through that. So Hillary saw the first instance, I think, of this youth kind of retelling the Hawaii context. And then as I realized these youth were going into college, or they were going to the workplace, or they were going to university, I also had to set my eyes towards the existing university students who were organizing in their own spaces, but not necessarily seeing the links beyond the student clubs. So Hillary and some other youth leaders, maybe their names will come up in our dialogue today. They were some of the folks I was looking to in terms of, I think they have this interest and they clearly have the capacity. And in what ways, as a youth educator, as you know, a supposed capacity builder, right, as a community practitioner, what am I doing in terms of material resources, opportunity and access to new networks that help them, right, find this vision for themselves? So they're not necessarily building and doing what I say or what somebody else might say, but they're finding their niche area and their area of practice on their own terms, which might have some influence from me, but it's not to dictate it. So I'm hoping that in this brief mention of Hawaii, that Hillary might also be compelled to share, because you know, I just opened that opportunity to youth to experience, because I had seen it in the literature, I had visited it myself, and I was trying to get more people to really understand what does it mean to see established programs, right? With, I'm not saying they're perfect models, but established programs and existing models in order to, right, inform whatever work might come over time. And it's different from reading it in like on a website or in a book or in a textbook, versus the experiential learning, right, of actually showing up. For some of these youth that I've taken to both Vancouver and or Hawaii, it's like sometimes their first time traveling beyond like their migration to Canada, right? The first time on a plane independent of their parents. And so I think I'm excited to actually hear from Hillary, because we haven't had full opportunity to debrief right? These connections to Filipino communities elsewhere, and how we take those learnings and those networks into our own work in the everyday.
I just find myself like taking deep sighs of relief, just like reminiscing Hawaii and Sariling Gawa. Like that was so inspirational, like to see that as like an up and coming person who's trying to get involved in the community but does not know how, and also she doesn't know how her skills can be fit into the community. That was where Hillary was at before she went to Hawaii. And then, like Monica said, like these are not perfect models, but they are truly inspirational. And when we went to Sariling Gawa, I saw how the youth was like collaborating with the older folks in the community, and how both perspectives are so, well, to me at the time, it seemed so seamless. Like it was just the perfect integration of like prior knowledge and also new experiences that are being felt by youth in the Filipino youth in Hawaii. Also, it really, Hawaii inspired also my research now, because when I was talking to the friends I've met who are based in Hawaii at University of Manoa, they were saying how they had certified language courses, Filipino mother tongue language courses, not just Tagalog, also like Ilocano was the biggest one there. And I was so stunned. I was like, what do you mean you have certified language courses? That's to me, that's a wild thought. And then now that I read into it, and now looking at it from like an educator perspective, or educator in a making perspective, I can see the possibility of this being implemented in the schools that I will be working in the future. So it was a push to, yes, go into education, but also like fuel your own community by like through these practices that you're seeing that are being integrated into like their everyday lives as leaders, as Filipino youth in a particular geographic space. And it was simply inspirational. That was Hawaii for me. And that was a degree, Monica.
Oh, interesting. I always like to see and to hear these stories coming out from you. I something that Monica said that resonated to me is the idea of looking for spaces beyond the classroom. And certainly these are very good examples of that. I am a huge advocate of working together with the community, not just the university, sort of going to places and imposing their knowledge, but also working with the community in something that I call the community. So how can we bring knowledges from the community to the university, but also going from the university to the community and work together? So I think this is a good example of the things that we are trying to do from different angles, from different perspectives, like how can the people from university or from the academic work can actually move away from the actual classroom and into the actual reality. And I'm happy to hear that. Now, another follow-up question that I wanted to hear from you folks, and maybe perhaps Hillary can start, is the, like, I understand that you work with community, the Filipino community, the diaspora. So I wonder, what are some of the challenges that you have seen, that you have experienced from the Filipino diaspora here in Canada? For you, Hillary, in Toronto, what are the specific challenges that these people face? For you, Monica, what are the challenges that you have experienced or seen from the Filipino community in Montreal specifically?
Before I start, I would like to say that this is coming from like my specific perspective and also experience working with the Filipino community as a youth and working with youth. So I'll start off there. I think the biggest challenge when it comes to like community organizing and just community organizing and outreaching is sustainability, and also finding common ground with like people who are like new members that are coming into the team and stuff. I was heavily involved with a student organization that's based in university. And that has, yes, you have access, you have resources, but you also have limitations. And every year, the team changes and the mandate changes, and how you execute the mandate is changing every month or every week. So that was one of the biggest challenge as like a university student working within a student organization. Also, second, I feel like Filipino organizations throughout lack a sense of a stronger connectivity within one another. Like there's, I feel like in some areas we are fragmented and it's difficult to collaborate because we have different agendas, we have different missions. I'm not saying that one is preferred over the other. Of course, there are different needs that need to be met that is specific to Filipino youth and the Filipino community at a larger sense. But I believe that like the Filipino community can, and there is a possibility of having a stronger and closer connection with one another. That to me is the biggest challenge. I'll pass it over to Monica.
So you were asking about kind of specific issues in the Montreal context. So, you know, I had to learn these point blank on like day one of the PhD. I was mindful that I was coming from the Toronto context, didn't even understand anything related to issues in Quebec. And so I can tell you a little bit about what I learned. So, I mean, Quebec is what most folks will know to be apparently the bilingual province or the French-speaking province. But if you just take a little scratch, a critical scratch at history, you will know that it's deeply political, the landscape for language and culture in the Quebec context. So, you know, I want to segue specifically about Filipinos. So Filipinos do settle in Montreal or in Quebec. You know, the typical temporary foreign workers or caregivers can find their way here. So the issues are sometimes in a little ways similar to other locations in terms of newcomer issues, let alone, you know, second generation issues. But when you add the complexity of languages, so the assumption and expectation that functionally you must know French, imagine coming to Canada, specifically Quebec, and more particularly Montreal, right? Perhaps as a Filipino youth from the Philippines, so directly from the Philippines here, you're likely proficient in English, you likely speak at least one dialect from the Philippines, and yet, right, you cannot function in the Quebec context when work mandates or assumes French fluency first and foremost. So you can see here that they are already the conditions for their integration, for their success in education, let alone labor or employment or workplace, whatever you want to, let's talk about those measures, right? The very first instance of access through language requires French. In French, right, you can only access English-speaking schools if you had at least one parent attend an English-speaking school, okay? Here, then, right, you're forced to enter into French. They have their own integration. They call them like the welcoming classes, getting to understand Quebec culture, right, Francophone culture. It's already setting you up to fail unless you are able to acquire the language and acquire it quickly. So as a scholar, an early scholar, when I first joined, I was like, half of the literature is in French. I can't even understand it, but I can see it. I can see it based on where the youth are hanging out. I could see it based on where they're employed. I could see it in terms of their absence at McGill, but their presence in other, you know, what they call CGEP or college spaces, or they're even bypassing all of this and choosing to go to an English province because life here is not so easy unless you accept and integrate on those French terms, right? So I'm happy to talk more, but the French, the Quebec context is not easy unless Filipinos are equipped in terms of their time, their timing to acquire the language quickly, or their sheer perseverance to learn this functional French in order to hopefully survive in the workplace. There's a whole other question about all the other things, but I think this is the key one. You'll see high school dropouts because of this. How can you finish, right? If you're forced to learn French, engage in French, you cannot access anything. And so why would you bother? You could just work at a factory or at McDonald's, right? Cool. So I share that. Hopefully that gives you some food for thought in terms of the very complicated issues for Filipinos, specifically Filipino youth in the Montreal context.
No, definitely. You know, I am surprised, but not surprised at the same time. This is something that most, if not all, the immigrants in Montreal, in Quebec area, you know, I'm also been studying a little bit for a while about the immigration and refugee system in Canada. And then specifically in Montreal is Filipinos is just one example of the many things that have been happening, and it's a bigger issue, right? So anyhow, I have just a few minutes to wrap up this interesting conversation that we just started with the challenges. So my next question is related to the opposite side, which is now that we know these challenges, what do you think, both Hillary and Monica, what can be done to solve these challenges? Is there anything that could be done from either the government, from the schools, from education, from community organizers, from you? What are the possibilities? I want to hear you guys talking about what are those positive things or the possibilities to overcome these challenges that the Filipino community faces in Canada, both Toronto, Montreal, Quebec.
So when I think about challenges, I'm very pragmatic. So I'm happy to talk solutions or possibilities. So I'll be very pointed in my sharing of what solutions or what possibilities I see the most relevant, the most urgent, and the most realistic in terms of addressing the very issues Hillary's speaking to in the Montreal, in the Toronto context, let alone elsewhere, right? Across the country, across urban sites, across rural sites, etc. So we're all in education, right? We know this. We come to this profession, we come to this discipline, typically with an agenda, right? And desire to help support youth, students to come through, right? And be empowered themselves. I think about this in a very intentional way. So Hillary and I are the examples of empowered, right? Empowered Filipino youth who found the language to understand what our experiences were growing up, right? What our challenges were in post-secondary. And then we took a concerted effort to do this work as part of our professional work. And I keep this eye towards this professional work first and foremost, because especially Filipino youth, especially Filipino potential young professionals, we have material needs. So I'm interested in building up this practitioner base, whether that's educators like Hillary, who've chosen to miraculously go to the program I went to also at OISE, right? Or maybe it's in social work, because they too can equip themselves within a profession with the very tools that they need to use in the community. So my hope, my efforts, all of my efforts are actually situated here in that, how do I provide the meaningful applied frameworks and tools to these very students? They could be Filipino. They usually are. They're usually racialized if they're not Filipino. I might meet them on the street, or I might meet them at the university. But nonetheless, I invest my time, right? My hard time, my material resources, my access to networks and information, to knowledge, to people, to capital, in order for them to do something perhaps like me. And it can look so differently from my trajectory. But if they have the toolkit in order to do this transformative work, then we're in a better position tomorrow than we are today. So I'm excited to hear Hillary's response to this, because I think it might be modeled and mirrored, because this is why we find ourselves in education.
Yes, when you asked that question, I was really thinking of concrete steps that can be done now by youth and by student organizations in particular to kind of elevate their work that goes beyond the university walls and reaches out to the Filipino community at a broader context. So when I say these words, I'm trying to address these student organizations that I'm still kind of like in touch with and everything. And I'd like to say, please build up and maintain your connections with Filipino organizations at in the broader context. There is already established, in some student organizations, there's already established connections with community spaces or even like art initiatives. There's already contact there, but please maintain it. This will help your student organization have more resources and also cater to the needs of your student population. I also want to address Filipino educators specifically, and also Filipino educators in Toronto specifically, because there's so many Filipino youth here. Please, please provide them with culturally relevant support. And you are a role model to them, even if you know it or not. You being like you holding a position of power and then in a setting where they go to every day, where they interact with every day, please realize that you are a role model to them. And ask yourself, what are you going to do with this power? You have a sense of there is a sense of hierarchy in the school system. So how are you going to support Filipino students or other racialized students in your capacity as an educator? And with education or with teaching in general, we do a lot of self-reflections. So please take some time to reflect on your pedagogy or even how you interact with students outside of the school setting, outside of formal school settings, like the classroom or like your office or whatever. There is, you are building a connection with them that goes beyond the school walls or formal school settings.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for that answer. I like what you have said today. The idea that I believe you folks are a good example to model and to mirror. And what you just said about the idea of maintaining your connections with your community and keep reflecting every day on the work that you do, I think that's a good message that is being sent to the community in general, not only to the Filipino community, but anybody who's working with the communities who are marginalized. It's important to keep that connection, and it's important to keep reflecting on learning and relearning every single day, because we cannot get stuck in the past, right? And so we need to move forward from now on and protect those communities and start reaching out for those resources that you mentioned that are more in line and more relevant to our cultures and communities as well. And I really appreciate the work that you both do at different ends of your work, both one in Toronto and the other person in Montreal. I really appreciate that. So in order to finish up this conversation today, I wonder if Monica has some last words for today, anything that you want your community, the Filipino community, to know, or like a takeaway idea or thought or anything that you want them to learn from today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to at least leave with some parting words directed to the community. I'm glad Hillary also modeled this for me in terms of very pointed calls to action. But I'd like to leave off not with a call to action, but rather an affirmation, right? An affirmation that the work that youth, Filipino, Filipina, Filipinx youth from high schools to colleges to universities are already self-organizing. They're already figuring out these gaps, these issues, these concerns. Typically, in spite of everything, they are not learning in their classroom settings, right? Including university classrooms, including at my own university, right? They are still self-organizing and they're finding ways to connect and do this very work that we have found ourselves to do now. And so I just want to say that I want them, those who will listen, because our network is wide, that I see their work, right? I want to affirm their work in every single instance where I'm able to hype up or amp up their work And if they are compelled to make this into a paid position as teacher, a paid position as clinician, a paid position as organizer at a meaningful nonprofit, like, I'm here for that. So I'm very particular about the huge investment we need to take with our youth and start them, and I'm here for any of it. So with that, those are my closing words for today's podcast.
All right. Thank you so much, both Monica and Hilary, for being today in Chasing Encounters. I really appreciate the work that you do, as I said. And I hope the listeners today, especially the Filipino community, get something out of our conversation today. I appreciate your work.
Dakala salamat, Yasid. Thank you so much for having us.
All right. And for everybody, have a good rest of the week. This is Chasing Encounters. Bye-bye.